You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Fun and games in the Edge Radio studio tonight. It's the cold weather. It must be freezing my brain. Here in the middle of the winter in Hobart, we are the Dice Men Cometh, and we're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. My name is Mark.
I'm Garth.
Garth, and it's just you and I tonight.
I know, it's two-thirds of the Dice Men, because Leon is working something like 500 hours this week and can't find one more to come and talk about board games, card games, tabletop games, all those kind of games.
Well, he probably hasn't had any time to watch the soccer either. Have you? The World Cup?
Gosh, some good, some not so good, it must be said.
I stayed up to watch Australia. I should have known I was going to be disappointed. But we can't complain because we're not Germany. I mean, they went from expecting to win it to knocked out completely.
Das ist uber tough.
Yeah, and Renee must be very happy. Mexico looking really good there. Hopefully I'm going to catch up with him at LFG soon in Sydney.
Yeah, you'll be there in a fortnight, won't you?
If people haven't heard, I'm going to be there.
Yeah, flying up on Friday the 13th.
Oh, yes. Wow. Anyway, we have got another exciting show for you tonight. As I said, it's episode 218 on the 28th of June. We're going to talk about one of the amazing games that I hadn't played before until we went to BorderCon. Mm-hmm. I think you'd played it before, but...
Well, I had, but not with the expansion that we played. So we will talk about the base game that you played and the expansion that I had at BorderCon recently. You're also going to make up for lost time with a couple of Kickstarter updates, no doubt.
Yep, got a few things happening there. Although I must say it's not a super exciting time to be on Kickstarter, but we'll talk about those.
Well, that's fine.
I think we're probably going to talk about maybe another game we played at BorderCon if we don't run out of time.
Correct.
And lots of banter. Well, lots of course, back and forward.
Nothing but the best. But before we do that, we do have to thank Area 52, perennial sponsors, for all their support and the fact that they run a game shop in cold old Hobart, which is now chilling down again after the hotness that was Dark Mofo. So they're 104 Elizabeth Street. They have all your pop culture needs, including comics and games and normal books and Funko Pops and toys and all that other stuff. But right now, we're going to throw to a song. We are the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
There you go. That was Florence and the Machine, although that was a bit of a remix there with Sweet Nothings here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. And, of course, we are proudly presented by Area 52, they're at least Tasmania's leading pop culture retail store with the games, the books, the anime, manga, pop, vinyls, role-playing, everything you need there, and lots of other things besides you might be surprised about, Garth.
I'm constantly surprised at their amazing bargains and crazy things.
Garth, we've been playing a lot of games lately because we've come back from BorderCon.
Have we ever?
But one in particular, as I said, I hadn't played it. It was on my list when I went there because I've heard such good things about it.
Yep.
You had played it and said good things.
That's true, I had.
That game was?
That game was Flamme Rouge. Which is quite appropriate that we're talking about this, considering that we're only about a week or so away from Le Tour starting.
Le Tour de France,
starting, I think, on the 7th of July. So that's going to be pretty amazing, and because of that connection, it is completely apt that Flamme Rouge is a cycling game. Now, there aren't many of those, it must be said.
And it doesn't sound like the most exciting theme, but boy, is this a fun game.
Well, it made me almost break my BorderCon rule.
Ooh.
Which was, I went into BorderCon with one commitment, and that was to play as many new games as possible.
Yes, me too.
I'd put a circle around a Saturday night Battlestar Galactica, basically sitting around the table and yelling at everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Cylon, never am a Cylon, just putting it out
there.
And also the annual game of Cosmic Encounter. And they were the only two games that I was going to play that I had played before. Now, Flamme Rouge, you had not played. I had played at PAX 2016.
Yeah.
Far out. No, 2017. Gosh, it's not that long ago.
Time flies, Garth, when you're getting old like you.
But the way we got around it is because we played this with the new Peloton expansion. So that's how I justify the fact that this is an entirely new game to me. But what is this game, Mark, apart from cycling?
Yeah.
Well, this is a modular board, I guess kind of simultaneous action selection card game where each player, now base game plays up to four, the Peloton expansion allows that to go up to six players, will simultaneously be controlling two cyclists in a predetermined route or route, depending on your pronunciation. And the board really looks cool because it's all these individual segments of your track.
Yes.
Now, it's not just velodrome style round and round and round. It is corners and there are uphills and downhills, which are signified. Yes, there are the uphills, which are, you know, signified by things getting a bit tougher. Yes. There are downhills where everyone gets a little bit faster.
Refreshment spaces where you can grab a drink on the way
through. That's part of the Peloton expansion.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, which you may not have realised because we just went straight in there. But the way this game works is really quite simple. You're going to line up behind the start line as you do. Everyone gets their two riders. Now, each team of two riders, the riders have two, I guess, different strengths. You've got one sprinter,
yeah,
and you've got your other one, which is your roulier. Apologies
what?
For pronunciation, but thematically, you've got the sprinter who's good at getting up at the front and just sort of, you know, fits and starts getting a big lead. And then you've got your roulier, who's your more consistent sort of workhorse, or just chug along and do what he needs to and for the goodness of the team.
Well, that's the thing in cycling, because it's not just about how fast can you go. It's about then conserving energy, working as a team, working with other teams, getting in behind and slipstreaming and getting sucked along and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that, which is part of the more interesting mechanics in this game. But very simply, each player has these two decks of cards in front of them. One deck is their sprinter deck and the other one is their roulier deck.
Yes.
And they're not the same. They've got two different pictures on them, so you can easily differentiate which cyclist they're for. But the consistency of the decks is different again. Now, they will all have numbers starting at two up to potentially nine.
Yes.
And you're going to be siphoning through these decks really quickly because on your turn, very simply, you're going to draw the first four cards from one of the decks. Say I choose to draw the sprinter deck first. Uh-huh. Draw four cards. Have a look at the four cards I've got in my hand. Choose one of them to put down face down and then put the other three face up at the bottom of the deck. Every time I then go through the deck and I reveal the first face-up card, I'll shuffle whatever's left and that will become my deck for the next time. The issue is every time I have chosen a card and then use it, that card's out of my deck forever.
Single use only.
And these decks are not particularly thick.
No.
So you play this game going, I don't have enough cards. There's no way I've got enough cards in this deck. I cannot have enough cards to get my rider from the start all the way to the end. That's how I've felt every time I've played this game.
I had that feeling probably two-thirds of the way through, looking at how far away the finish line was and knowing that I think I'd use most of the big numbers up. I just thought, oh, no, how embarrassing. I'm not even going to finish.
Exactly. So that's the thing. Everyone simultaneously draws four cards from one deck, chooses one, puts the other three face up, gets the other four cards from the other deck, does the same thing, and then simultaneously everyone will reveal those cards, showing everyone how many squares forward each particular rider is going.
Yes.
It's all very, very simple. The player who is currently leading the race will go first. And there are a couple of mechanics to differentiate that if there are two or three bikes all in the same sort of line. It's usually the one that's closest to the left or right. I can't remember.
Yeah.
One of them is considered to be in front of everyone else. So they go first and say it's my red sprinter. I'll play my red sprinter card and say I move five spaces forward, very simply, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
Then you go next and your second and your sprinter might go nine spaces and goes bang, 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 bang. And everyone will have that turn. And then after everyone has moved their sprinters, that's when the slipstreaming will happen.
Yes.
Now, the slipstreaming happens when there is precisely one square between the back of a rider and the front of the next rider.
Yeah.
And the slipstreaming mechanic works from the back forward, so you'll always start with the furthest and last placed riders. If there's any slipstreaming that happen, they'll all move up into a clump. And then if that clump is eligible for slipstreaming, they'll move up. And some riders gliders, you can actually move forward 2, 3, 4 spaces if you've been able to get the slipstreaming mechanic to work, which is great because you're getting a whole bunch of movement without having to expend your higher value cards. Yeah. And In this game, that's massive.
I was going to say, that's a super important part of this game
mm.
is trying to play those cards to work out so you can get to where you would be slipstreamed and therefore, well, I really not like to move 7 or 8 spaces, but if I can do that with a 4 or a 5 card, that's a very efficient
that's
way of
wonderful.
Doing it.
Because you might have in your deck for each rider 2 number 9 movement mm. cards, and they're massive. They will get you a long way away. But you only got 2 of those for the whole race.
Yeah,
you've got a sort of diminishing return as you get higher and higher up. You might have quite a lot of 2s and 3s and 4s, but then you get fewer 5s, fewer 6s, and so on and so on. Now, it's all pretty straightforward. You'll generally find that a lot of players on their turn will choose 2 numbers that will mean that their 2 riders, conveniently enough, end up with exactly 1 space gap
yes,
between them.
Certainly.
So everyone's got this little team strategy going ahead. And you can only ever really control that. You can't control what the other players are going to do because they're all your damn stinky competitors.
Yes.
You want to get in front of them. But what plays a bit more havoc is the terrain and also just the sheer shapes of the track that you're going on because
yes.
the width of the track might go from 1 square wide to 3 squares wide. And if you try and move your cyclist forward in the spot you're due to finish on is already occupied, you go back.
Yes.
And you've just wasted one of those precious squares of movement that you are fighting for during this game. And that's even highlighted more and more again with the Peloton expansion because it's got some very long bits of road that have 1 square wide and that's it.
Yeah.
And that can be one hell of a bottleneck to try and get through because it's also on cobblestone, which is thematically appropriate for the style of racing. And on cobblestone, yeah, slipstreaming not so good. So
extra friction,
exactly,
science, physics.
You're not going to just get slipstreamed up, which is horrible. I was going to say it sucks, but it doesn't suck because you
right.
don't get any free suction.
And we, the track we played, the particular one from the Peloton expansion, had 2 really big cobblestone sections. And not only were they really big, but they were really narrow as well.
Exactly.
So talk about sort of brakes on, you're not going anywhere.
Definitely. Now, you also have these other, I think, you know, just these other wider sections, which are 3 and 4, and they will allow you to basically not recharge, but if you start your movement in one of these sort of areas, and you'll see it's outlined with a blue hex.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what number you play, it's a refresh station. It'll automatically count as at least 4 movement. So that's a great way to play one of your number 2 cards
yes.
that you don't want in your deck. Now, another reason that that's very, very handy is because if you're lucky enough to be winning this race, or even lucky enough to be the head cyclist in a group. Now, a group is, I guess, easily enough to be explained. If you're the lead rider where there is absolutely no one in the squares in front of you,
yeah.
so you've got clear air, because thematically you've had to exert yourself to get to the front, clearly you've got to take some exhaustion.
Yes.
So you get to clog up your already really horribly thin deck with exhaustion cards, which are just very simple.
Oh, yeah.
2 movement and that's it.
They are shocking.
They are horrible. So if you want to go into this game with a gung-ho, I'm just going to play all my big cards, get a big unobtainable lead, you will find very quickly
yeah.
that you will be crawling to the finish line in this because you will have nothing but exhaustion cards. It's a really simple game to play. It's so fun, but bloody hell, it's tough.
When we saw that in the, and I'm sure it happened more in our game than in others, because with the Peloton expansion and with the cobblestones, because you didn't have the sucking up where the group basically sort of joined up into one big mob, you then had, instead of the one front person getting exhaustion, we often had 3 or 4 people getting exhaustion because of those gaps in the group.
Yeah.
Which was really grinding and sort of slowed everyone down. Mm. Although it must be said, it didn't seem to slow down. Was it Richard and Sarah? They seemed to be not affected by it.
Well, they did magically. Pretty well, except it was pretty clear by the end who was the most most efficient team manager. and really had a great, you know, idea of how cycling works.
Who was that guy?
Because, well, look, he's one of the Dice Men. He's not here tonight, and he's not you. So process of elimination takes it to me. I was actually also got both of my riders across the finish line, which didn't happen to anyone else. So that was awesome. But Mark,
Garth,
I want to hear your thoughts on this because you hadn't played this before. It is a game. It's about $85 to $90. It is bloody brilliant, and I love the mechanics of it. The slipstreaming is fantastic. It looks beautiful. The one thing you've got to be aware of on some of the editions is that the cyclist minis, you'll find that the cyclist pops off his bike.
So
a lot of people will very delicately and very cleverly super glue the riders onto the bikes.
Okay.
There are two different molds, so you can easily see who is who and which one's a sprinter and which one's the roulier. But, yeah, tell me about it. You only played it this one time.
Well, I had heard a lot of good things about this, and I must admit I was scratching my head really beforehand because how can a very simple, basically a race game, be so much fun just by playing some cards? I mean, I've played, you know, like a game like Camel Up or something like that, or Camel Cup, depending on which way you look at the box. I thought, well, it's just a Tour de France version of that. But the dynamic of the track being quite narrow, and particularly, I think, what do we have? Six people with two riders each. So a lot of bikes on the track, taking up a lot of space in a narrow track. You've got the limited number of cards in your deck and the limited number of each card. I found those choices really interesting. Like, you know, I've got my sprinter and he's got two nines, but he's also got a couple of twos and threes and fours and, when am I going to use those nines? I don't want to get way out ahead and get exhaustion. Am I going to use it to catch up and get to the middle of the pack? And then I thought I had a good strategy to get back in the middle of the pack, but the bloody cobblestones, you know, slowed me down, and then I got exhaustion. And, you know, how you go backwards and forwards between the two bikes and trying to get one ahead and use that guy to suck up your other guy. And there's a lot of tactics to this. And the fact that you... How many tracks in the base game?
To be honest, I couldn't tell you.
I think there might be at least half a dozen.
Yeah.
And there's definitely that again or more in the... And because the pieces all mix up.
They all mix up. And what you can do is there's sort of a Grand Prix circuit.
Yep.
So it comes with track suggestions, which you then can turn into an extended campaign, I guess. Yeah. And also when you tap out the Peloton expansion, there's also this... little mechanic that allows you to have a sort of a breakaway at the very start. So rather than everyone starting behind the finish line, at the start, everyone gets to bid a card and bid two cards.
Mm-hmm.
And whichever two cyclists bid the two highest cards, they start maybe four or five squares in front of everyone else. But they also start with those cards completely out of their deck for the game. So it's really that risk-reward that you have to balance. It's tough, but the good thing is it plays bloody quick.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you that when you play it, you want to go and play it again. Because you immediately go, oh, damn,
and you just,
I got obliterated because I made a mistake and I can fix it now.
Well, I found that, you know, you just started to understand how it was working towards the end, how to work my team together, how to think about, oh, what's that person going to do? Where are they likely to end up? Lots of tactical decisions, which I really love. So it's not too strategic. You don't have to think too many turns ahead. And the fact that you're going through your cards nice and quickly, there's no downtime.
None whatsoever.
Everyone's having a turn. I was just, you know, it is simple, but it's simply fun with that tactical element, lots of variety in the base game. And then when you add the other expansion, I think it adds a heap of fun. It's a pity it's a little bit pricey here in Australia, but I wish you'd go and buy it, Garth, because I want to play it again.
Yeah.
I think anyone out there who hasn't tried it, give it a try for sure. It was way more fun than I was expecting from just what seems to be a simple cycling game.
There you go. So that's Flom Rouge with the Peloton expansion. Must be said that the designer, Asker Harding Granerud, is also the designer of the Cuban Missile Crisis game, which is the card game of, you know, it sort of compares itself to getting that Twilight Struggle feeling and theme, but in a short 45 minutes. So I cannot speak highly enough of Flom Rouge. I love it. I have almost bought it several times. But what does stop me is that it's $85 to $90 and the expansion is another $50. So you certainly don't need the expansion, but I want it because that's how I want to always play it. So anyway, two thumbs up for Flom Rouge from the Dice Men.
Fantastic. We will come back shortly and we'll talk about Kickstarter. Everything on there that is there for you to spend your money on. We'll be back shortly.
Hey, Mark.
Garth.
Have you heard all the horrible stuff that happens on Friday the 13th?
It's a scary time, as far as I understand.
Well, let me tell you that there is at least one good thing that's going to be happening on Friday the 13th, which is only a matter of weeks away.
Yeah?
It is LFG.
LFG?
As in, looking for games.
I'm looking for games.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing on the 13th to the 15th of July in Bankstown, Sydney?
I'm going to be there.
What?
I decided to go to Bankstown for the weekend.
That is the best coincidence I have heard all morning.
I'll say.
Because on that particular weekend, Friday the 13th till Sunday the 15th of July, LFG, or Looking for Gamers, Sydney, is hosting their 3-day tabletop event.
Really?
Can you believe your luck?
That's crazy.
It's like we paid for tickets and flew you up there or something for for some reason.
Well, I might as well go and play some games then.
Well, you are in luck because not only are there games demonstrations, they're open late every single day. There's casual gaming.
Oh, and I'm pretty casual.
No one gets more casual than you. But Mark, if you feel like wearing your competition pants, you can even do that.
A competition?
Not just one, but two.
Oh, really? I get to play against other people like for money and stuff?
Well, I don't know if there's any money involved, but you can play Rummy Cub. Or can you?
Maybe years ago, perhaps, but I'd certainly give it a crack, particularly if I had the chance to be, say, the Australian champion.
Well, not just that, because that competition is also going to be running at LFG.
Ooh.
You can also play Clask, which is that game where you stick your hands under the little table and move it around using magnets.
Oh, I've seen that. I've never played it. Wow, I'll have to give it a crack.
Well, you might not just give it a crack. You might be the Australian championship
Woo-hoo!
Winner. Now, there is also a design masterclass, so maybe you can learn how to play a game. You're also going to be doing those RPGs, and you love playing RPGs, but never being a DM.
Yes.
So maybe that'll spur you on to become the Dungeon Master of all.
Do you think there might be some demonstrations there from new games, Garth?
I reckon there would be, because there is even the Protospiel, which is all those new designers getting out and showing you their designs, and you get to go, wow, that's interesting, or, oh yeah, can I play that? And anywhere in between.
Fantastic. I love meeting new designers. I love playing new games. I love playing old games. I love meeting new people. I love giving away custom dice.
Oh, well, we have quite a few of those left from BorderCon. But look, it's only a couple of weeks away. It's the 13th of July, which is Friday, which is now lucky for all. Not unlucky for anybody. So if you are anywhere near the Sydney area on that particular weekend, make sure you head to LFG. It is being held at the Bankstown Sports Club. You can jump onto the LFG website, which is simply lfg-aus.com.au. They've got the link there. You can buy your tickets. You can buy a full weekend pass. And fortunately or unfortunately, have the privilege of playing a game with Mark from that famous Australian tabletop podcast.
Oh, yes. And you know, if you buy your tickets online, you can save up to 50% off the door price. There's Friday night gaming. You can grab a weekend pass. You get to play games with me. I'll be walking around wearing my Dice Man Cometh hoodie. I'd love to give you a custom die. I'd love to meet you all. And Sydney gamers, here's the challenge to you. You know those Melbourne gamers? They talk about you at BorderCon and they say you don't get out in numbers. Get out in numbers, I say!
So there you go. That's LFG, Friday the 13th till Sunday the 15th of July 2018. Be there and be square.
I'll see you there.
Woo! The internet, jumping down the intellect. Well, there you go. That was Promise with Tap Dance, and here's from Tassie.
There you go.
You're on the Dice Men Cometh, and more explicitly, we are on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Sure are.
Now, Mark.
Garth.
Would you like me to push this button?
Yeah, push it.
Love kick starts again.
Whew. Yeah, baby. There you go, Mark. What does that mean?
That's my theme. It's time for the love to kickstart again. With my Kickstarter update.
Wow, it's been long overdue, Mark.
It has. Well, now we've got a new system in. We're slowly learning how to work it here in Edge Radio. We'll talk about what is happening on Kickstarter. And as always, I'm going to lead with the Australian Games. A little bit of a quiet time on Kickstarter at the moment, funnily enough. Now, I don't like to talk about games that are going to fund or finish by the time that this podcast goes to air, which means you hear about them and you go, oh, yeah, I want to back that. And then you're not able to.
Correct.
So most of what I'm talking about today, still got a bit of time to run and you still can get on board as long as you're not listening to this podcast too far down the track. Now, the first one, we've heard of it before because it's been on Kickstarter before. This is the second run of Above Top Secret Mad Inventor Games in Adelaide. Now, the second time they pulled it down about halfway through the campaign because it sort of looked like it may or it may not fund. Anyway, it wasn't going in the direction they wanted to. So they put it up again about 24 days ago because it's got 6 days still to go. And the good news is they've got across the line this time around.
Lovely.
I think it was yesterday or the day before they crossed the line. Now, they're only after 8,000, so a very, very modest campaign. So far they've got 135 backers, and they've just said they've just creeped over that $8,000 mark. It's a two-player card game with sort of an X-Files theme, sort of a one of those dueling card games.
Yeah, two-player dueling card game where basically you're trying to destroy each other's military bases using various styles of technology. And it also comes with a couple of big, big, big player mats.
So you've got to pay extra to add those on. I guess the question I have about this one, though, is stretch goals.
Mm-hmm.
So it has some stretch goals, and they did adjust them a couple of times. Now, I said they were going for $8,000 to get it across the line. So they've got stretch goals at $8,500, $9,000, $10,000, $11,000, $12,000, a couple more. I don't know. To me, that just seems like that's not a stretch. That's stuff that was planned to be in the original game. And because they didn't get the funding that they thought they might get, they've sort of brought them back out because it's like, well, we can't put out the game with those bits because it basically won't work. And I don't know if that's what you really want to use stretch goals for these days.
Yeah.
I don't know. But look, they've got it across the line.
Well, it's always great to have another Australian game out there. The art is pretty amazing on this one. A lot of work has clearly been done on that. So it's good to see another Aussie game fund.
Yeah.
And look, if it's one of those ones where it grows a customer base and allows bigger and brighter things for the designer, then fantastic. That's a good little tech. But you're competing against a lot of big games. You're competing against Magic.
Well, one of the games you aren't competing against, pretty sure, is Hot Grommet Surf Star Challenge 3D interactive board game.
Whoa, radical, dude.
Now, this is by Tim Hatton in Sydney. Now, it's a very bold project.
Okay.
Because it includes a board game.
That's not so bold.
And virtual reality surfing.
Wow. Okay. I haven't had those two combined before.
That's right. Now, I must say, when I look at the board game component, I'm pretty sure that it's a roll and move game.
Mm-hmm.
This guy doesn't have any gaming cred, but he's certainly got some surf lifesaving cred. This guy has been a lifelong surfer and surf lifesaver and everything, so sort of kudos to him for that.
Right.
He has put a big target out there of $50,000.
Yeah, there's a lot of zeros there. I'm just assuming, is this a first project for him?
He definitely is. Okay. Yeah. And look, he's got 25 days to go, so a bit of time. But Garth, so far he's raised $1.32.
Yeah.
Now, the good news is, when I looked at this yesterday,
yep,
he'd only raised a dollar.
Oh, there you go.
So someone's given him another 32 cents.
How is that possible? Because he's got one backer.
Maybe they bumped up their pledge.
Okay, there you go.
So, I mean, look, it's interesting because it, as I said, it combines board gaming with virtual reality, which, you know, that's cutting-edge stuff.
Mm.
But it sort of seems like someone who's got a really great idea, and that's probably as far as it's got, you know, and combine it with a roll and move game. But hey, it's an Australian project. It's on Kickstarter.
If you're interested.
Yeah, check out Hot Grommet Surf Star Challenge 3D interactive board game.
It could be backer number two.
It could be. Now, the nature of Kickstarter, it changes so quickly, Garth.
Mm.
When I was doing some research yesterday, because I like to spread my research out a bit.
Of course.
I bought up Boomerang by Grail Games, and I was very excited that I'd get a chance to talk to the listeners about it tonight.
Yeah, because this is Scott Arms?
Scott Arms from Tiny Epic Games and the Heroes of Land, Air and Sea.
Yeah, and Holas.
Space Force, that game. So a lot of geek cred behind him, a lot of really great games. Was it Gameland Games? Is his own company. This is a game he's done for Grail Games, a lovely little Australian publisher, had some real hits in the past. And when I checked it today, it had funded.
Well, there you go. That means it has finished.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say congratulations to them that it did get funded, sort of just snuck over the line with a day to go or something like that. It's a card game. It combines roll and write.
Okay.
Or the sort of the ticking off on a score sheet from roll and write with a card drafting game.
Roll and write seems to be a more and more of a thing these days.
Well, you might have seen, Garth, I posted on our Facebook page, mainly for Leon, because he was like, what's a roll and write game? Never heard of them before. A video done by No Pun Included, where they talked about a few of the latest roll and writes, including Guns Shone Clever.
Yeah.
But just to give a few examples of other games in that genre. So this is combining roll and write because it takes the score sheet side, but no dice, with card drafting. But anyway, that was funded. So congratulations to Dave Harding and the team at Grail Games. They got another one over the line.
Brilliant.
Now, one final Aussie game. This one really piqued my interest. It's called The Grid AI Awakens.
Wow, that's so robotic, Mark.
And it's a card-driven game for 2 to 4 players when you take on the most exciting yet disturbing 21st century technology, which is artificial intelligence.
That's so bad.
No, Davros isn't in the room, Garth.
Wow,
it's just me.
That was amazing.
So this is by Real Grin Games from Brisbane and a guy called Mark Eremenko. I think this is his first project. Now, it has had a bit of a slow start. It's only been going a couple of days. They've already up to about $3,000 and they're going for 15. So maths tells me it's about 20% funded after 2 days.
That's amazing.
But it's a card-based game about AI where the AI is the game itself.
Okay.
Up to 4 players, and you can play solo, are playing competitively for victory points, but also you've got to keep an eye that the AI doesn't come alive and take over the world.
Was that a Donald Trump impression?
It's a bit Donald Trump AI, wasn't it?
Wow.
So Skynet style, it doesn't take over everything. Now, they're not after a big goal, $15,000, but $56,
okay,
including shipping, is, look, I know, we talked about Peloton being Flamme Rouge being $90, and this is a card game.
Yep.
But, you know, for someone with no track record, it's hard to say to people, you know, give me $50+ for what is pretty much just a card game. Although, having said that, the art looks nice, the components look nice, and it's quite a interesting theme that we don't see a lot of. So, you know, it's definitely worth a look. And as I said, the premise is, to me, is really intriguing. So that's The Grid AI Awakens by Real Grin Games. So it's still got 28 days to go from today.
Yep.
So hopefully plenty of time still when people get to listen to this podcast.
Interesting.
Now, where's this other one here, Garth? This game that everyone on the internet is going berserk for, I have no idea about.
Okay.
The Binding of Isaac.
Yeah,
Garth.
Okay.
Now, I asked you, had you ever heard of it? And you said, I think it's a video game. That was more than I knew. I was like, I looked at this, I saw some funny pictures, and they did look a little bit not as good, but in the style of the oatmeal.
Sure.
And exploding kittens.
From memory, the video game, and I'm sure I'll cop a lot of flack for getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's like a dungeon crawly thing. You're going from room to room, killing things, getting objects, da 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 da.
Well, it seemed to be made up of monsters.
Yeah.
And funny looking baby like creatures, which, I mean, I'm sure that's just a coincidence that you've got bears and babies and exploding kittens and you've got this. It's very much based on its own property from what I understand.
Okay. Yep.
Look, it's over 1,000% funded and it's only in its second day.
Yeah, and what does that 1,000% funded mean? It means the better part of $500,000.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, look, I don't think it's going to be another exploding kittens and get the multi-millions, but surely it's going to get $1 or $2 million at least. The art, I guess if you love the game, the video game, then the art is what you love it for.
Yeah.
It's not very attractive. As I said, it looks like bad oatmeal drawings, as in the oatmeal who did the exploding kittens, because at least that had his art, even though it wasn't a game.
So what is the game? How do you play this? What do you do? Do you
so
know?
So it's a card game.
Yep.
And that's about all I know. I didn't even look into it that deeply just because it looks so uninteresting. It's like nothing that I would look at.
Yep.
Here, I'll bring it up for you, Garth, for those of you in Radio Land. I'm bringing it up on the computer monitor so Garth can see. Now, that art, it's not real attractive, is it?
No, but it does look exactly like my very, very limited experience looking at the video game.
And so, it seems to be, I don't want to say an Exploding Kittens clone. It's a card game where the cards interact variously with each other. And I believe there might be some dice in it as well. But it's basically lots of cards in a box that talks about the Binding of Isaac. So it's called the Binding of Isaac, Four Souls.
Yep.
I don't know what that means.
But look, in all seriousness, I mean, the game might be absolute crap. It might not be. But it's 25 US bucks. You get 4 character cards for Isaac, Maggie, Cain, and Judas, 4 starting items, 100 monster cards, 100 loot cards, 100 treasure cards, 2 bonus soul cards, a 6-sided custom Binding of Isaac die, 1 8-sided one as well, 100 pennies and a rule book. And if you live in America, it's all free shipping.
That's right. So if you're in America and it's like 25 US dollars, that's awesome. If you're in Australia, a quick conversion tells me, including shipping, 59 Australian dollars. Yeah, so all of a sudden, you're right, you are getting, about 320 cards there.
And 100 pennies. That's 100 pennies. That's a dollar worth of pennies.
Are they cardboard pennies, Garth?
Well, probably.
Yeah. But anyway,
but if they're American
dollars worth of pennies, that's right. And that adds at least a dollar to the value of the game.
Well, that'd be American pennies, so you can convert them back.
And look, I guess these sort of games are bringing new people to playing tabletop games instead of video games. I hope it's good. Look, if anyone out there knows about this video game and they can have a look at this Kickstarter and go, oh, wow, that looks amazing, let us know. I'm curious to know because I had never even heard of this video game. That's how old I am.
Wow, you've been too busy playing Subnautica.
Now, Garth.
Yes.
You've heard of the game Guess Who?
I sure haven't have. You? Yeah.
Well, there's an amazing game on Kickstarter right now, which has a very similar, I don't want to say feel because this is not something you want to feel. It plays very similar to Guess Who.
Okay, so it's got those same sort of two-person.
The little flip lift down. Up and lift down two boxes. Players. Yep. You've got little things flipping down.
Cool, sounds like fun.
Let me tell see if you can guess from the name,
okay,
what this game is about, Garth.
All right.
It's called Guess Poo.
Oh, God. All right. All right. Is it photographic examples straight from, various doctors' labs and...
No.
That's good.
No. You'd be glad to know it's cartoony art.
Cartoon fecal art.
Of all your favourite poos. So some of the titles of the poos, you've got Percy Peanut. You've got Admiral Brown. You've got Martha Pellet. You've got Laura Waft. So you've got all different shapes and sizes of poos.
Okay, a few
different
colours.
Colours and consistencies. So look, it's not much of a game, but whoever thought of this, it's very clever. Now, I'm probably a bit sad to say, Garth, it's not going to fund.
Oh, wow. It's not. Sorry, looking, you've just brought it up.
No, so it's only got 4 days left to go. By the time this podcast come out, it's probably finished.
Yep.
It's only raised close to $2,000 of the sort of over 13 thereafter. Only 79 other people like poo humour, obviously.
Look, it's the kind of thing that if it was in a reject shop or a bargain store, you'd pay $2 for it and give it away as a joke present. I don't know how much they're asking for a copy of that, but you'd sort of maybe play it for 5 minutes and then go, that's about enough.
Of course, our very good friends Oren and Georgie at their game-themed wedding, they had a very clever use of a Guess Who game where it had cartoony art of every single guest at the wedding, and then when you flipped yourself down on the back, it told you what table you were sitting on.
Yeah, it served two purposes because it told them who'd already sort of arrived and where they were sitting, and it helped me as the guest go, okay, I'm sitting at that table.
And it was a lot of fun and very novel.
It was. And my drawing made me look very thin, so thank you very much.
And, you know, given our friend Oren does have a few challenges in the bowel area, maybe they could have got a copy of this and made all the wedding guests cartoon poos.
Well, maybe they can do that to celebrate their one-year anniversary.
Anyway, that's guess poo. Now, one serious game that I want to mention that is absolutely gorgeous by Thundergriff Games. It's called Tang Garden.
Yeah, I've seen this one.
It's getting close to $1 million Australian funding, almost 2,000% funded, and it's getting close to 7,000 backers, which is pretty big in the backer numbers. Still got 12 days to go. Massive amount of stretch goals. There's over 30 stretch goals unlocked. This is the game of creating a Chinese imperial garden. Now, I always get confused between my Chinese gardens and my Japanese gardens.
Well, Japanese ones are the ones with Godzilla.
In the garden?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, because remember, Godzilla is not mythical. I remember that. That's one thing I remember from our Rising Sun
discussion. Yeah, that's right. He's a real thing because he's sure in a game. So, look, I think they've actually blended versions of both here because you've got some Zen, Buddhist bits and pieces in your garden. You've got shrines. You've got 3D shrines, I should say, and trees and pavilions. You've got very, very gorgeous minis.
It does look good.
Now, it's absolutely gorgeous. I don't know how much of a game it is because it sort of seems like you're just building this absolutely beautiful game. But clearly there are ways to score points as you build. You're not building a garden each. You're all building the same garden.
Cooperatively?
No.
So well, you're competitively...
Yeah, you're competitively building the same garden. Okay. I believe as you place different things, you get different coins, which score different points. But, you know, the trees in this look a lot like the trees from that tree game. His
Photosynthesis.
Name is Escape Me. That's the one.
Yep.
Even the minis. Like, the minis are real cool mini or not quality.
Yep.
A very, very nice. It's an amazing-looking game.
It does look good, I must say.
I watched the video and just showed people making a garden and looked like they're having a lot of fun. So maybe, you know, if you're extremely competitive, maybe it's not for you. But if you like beautiful-looking games.
Could it be a similar game to Takedo? Where, see, Takedo, yes, it's a competitive game. You're racing each other to the other end. But I don't care yet less at all. I just think it's such a lovely, relaxing Sunday morning kind of game.
No!
Where you're just leisurely taking a stroll. That's what this kind of sounds
like. You can be
like.
So cutthroat in Takedo, though. If I look and I see, hey, Garth's just about run out of money. There's only one, what is it, the farm?
Yep.
Where you get your three coins. There's only one farm left before the next inn. I don't care about getting that next
panorama
card. I'm going to jump on the farm, and that's going to totally screw Garth over and set him up badly for the next session. I think that game can be really cutthroat.
Oh, see,
I don't love it.
Play like that way. I'm just whatever.
Well,
just
anyway, Tang Garden. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's made a heap of money. The designer is Gonzalo Aguirre Bisi. I don't know anything that he's done before. He's clearly created a few other Kickstarters. But if you want to check it out, Tang Garden, it is absolutely gorgeous. He's a Spanish designer. It's really worth checking it out. Now, another one.
And it's got, just under 2 weeks to go. This is plenty
of time. Still a bit of time there. Now, another one that I didn't expect to see on Kickstarter, Garth. I don't know if we ever talked about Coldwater Crown on the show.
Well, I think you were the only one who played it. Because this was a BorderCon 2 years back, wasn't it?
Oh, no, I think it was last year.
Really?
Yeah, I can't remember. Okay. Anyway, maybe. But yeah, so I'm the only one of us who's played Coldwater Crown, which is a worker placement game about
fishing
competitions. And you have this mechanic where you're gathering bits of bait out of your tackle box, combining the bait to then catch fish. And then you're competing for the most different fish, heaviest fish, different fishing competitions. And it has the worker put one down, pick one up, the same as...
Oh, same as Raiders of the North Sea. You mentioning that, whether it was on air or not? I don't listen to you that well.
Because you only have one worker. So you basically put one down and pick one up. This is an expansion, Coldwater Crown, the sea. And so it adds more fishing to this... cooperative competitive fishing game, which I had quite a bit of fun with. I mean, a lot of people aren't into fishing, Garth, let's say that.
Fair enough.
So it's not a theme that everyone's going to explore, but...
In fact, I am yawning right now.
Okay. But Coldwater Crown the Sea, you can catch the giant squid.
Oh, the kraken.
And you can, basically you're going out to sea doing some sort of open sea, deep sea fishing in your little cardboard your little cardboard boat that you build.
So is this an
like
expansion
an
or a standalone?
No, so this is an expansion to Coldwater Crown.
Okay.
But of course, like every good expansion Kickstarter, you can back the base game as well. So you can get the base game and the expansion. If you want to do that, so it's $24 for the expansion, $68 for the base game and the expansion. So then if you ship it to Australia, you're looking at about $120 Australian for both, which, you know, so many times we say, oh, it's expensive for a Kickstarter. But then if you compare it to other games, it's not that expensive. I guess it's more of a you're going to be into the fishing theme.
Yes.
Maybe.
And quickly, as you were the only one who played it, does it replicate fishing? Does it give you the theme? Does it give you the feeling?
Apart from the fact that I stayed dry and I actually caught fish, it reminded me a lot of fishing.
Okay.
You know, and what I did like about it, there's lots of different competitions, and you can go for like the biggest mixed bag, or you can go for the biggest dory, or the biggest... I don't think it was any tuna. But, you know, like a particular type of fish.
Well, there might be tuna in the sea.
Well, they're mainly northern hemisphere fish.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess it's sort of like UK-US centric in terms of the fish you catch. You're not catching any flatties.
No.
Not that I know of.
No Nemos.
You're not catching any dories. Or you may be, actually.
You just said best dory, didn't you?
You're not catching any, like, hammerhead sharks or anything. But, look, it is quite fun with the bait mechanics. So if you're into fishing... If you've played Coldwater Crown and you thought a lot of it, then check out Coldwater Crown the Sea.
Okay.
Now, one of the Kickstarters is not like the others.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a game.
Okay.
It's by a company
kind of like Guess Poo.
By Folded Space. Have you heard of Folded Space, Garth, apart from in science fiction?
No, but I do generally spend my life within it.
In Folded Space.
Yeah, of course.
Well, Folded Space, this is their second campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They produce board game inserts and organizers, much like your Broken Token. Your
Meeple Realty. Daedalus, or
except
or
these are made from, let me get this right, a material that's new to the industry called Evercore.
Ooh.
So it's not foam core.
Not made from unobtainium.
No. It comprises layers of printed laminated card, combined with EVA, whatever that is, memory foam, extravehicular activity.
Wow.
Memory foam.
So you can sleep on it.
The thing about it is it's very light and very rigid.
Okay.
So you know when you've picked up one of those games that someone has, say, a Broken Token insert, it weighs an absolute ton.
Sure does.
This hardly adds any weight to the game itself, but it can do everything that foam core... It's laminated, the wood stuff. What's it called? I can't remember.
Yep.
Fancy wood cut out by lasers. they had a really successful Kickstarter campaign. I think they had 1,000 backers in the first campaign. This is their second campaign. They've got over 1,600 backers in this campaign, and it's still got 9 days to go.
Yep.
And there is a huge list of games that they produce for. So, you know... Seven Wonders, you're looking at 10 poons.
Okay.
So not a lot for that. Five Tribes, Feast for Odin, they're all 10 poons. Go for something like Wards of Waterdeep, you're looking at 15 pounds. Right up to Scythe, 20 pounds. And even TI 4th Edition, 25 pounds. So that's probably one of the biggest one,
but
or Rising Sun.
So much cheaper than the wooden inserts.
Yep, and then you can still order all the things that came from the first campaign. So, of course, in the first campaign, they had Gloomhaven. I think so. Again, Gloomhaven is like £25.
Wow.
I think you're looking for shipping round about £10, but you can add extra ones, and the shipping, because it's so light, the shipping hardly goes up at all.
And they'd be flat packing it, so
you just
pop it out.
And then you just basically pop it out and put it together. Really simple to assemble.
Okay.
So I know we've looked often at the Meeple Realty Broken Token and gone, oh, I'd love to get some of that stuff.
Shipping
and it's just the shipping kills you because it's heavy,
And it also, they're quite expensive themselves. So here's a very realistically priced alternative that people can check out. So it's called Folded Space, inserts and organizers, and it still has 9 days to go. Might You're into that stuff, and look, what gamer isn't?
Yep.
Definitely check it out. And the last one, So Long My World. It's described as a 1-5 player psychological horror card game where you must face the inevitable end of all humankind. You challenge other players in a competitive multiplayer, or you play a campaign specifically designed for solo play.
There you go. You'd love that.
Now, this one, I know you sort of look at it and you go, I don't really understand, but my goodness, it's gorgeous because it's cards, it's tokens, it's even got a couple of minis. And as I was scrolling through this, I popped up a little blurb, mm-hmm. a little review by someone called Matthew Lee of the campaign, one of our fellow Kanga judges.
There you go.
Where he says, So Long My World takes a different approach, drawing on the very nature of human self-awareness and the structure of reality itself. The game appears to deliver a familiar play experience in a new way. Do you even understand what that was saying?
I hardly ever understand what Matt's saying.
Look, anyway, he clearly thought highly of it because it does look really nice. It's got some beautiful art and some beautiful cards. If you're into a psychological horror card game, have a look. You might understand what it's about because when I watched the video, at the end of it, I was scratching my head.
Okay.
Because it's just got all sorts of terms and things.
Wow.
But look, it's still got 12 days to go. It's, as I said, over 1,000 backers. It's over 500% funded. It's only 44 euro, including shipping. So it's not that much. I reckon it's one of those games that you're either into that theme or you're not.
Gotcha. Fair enough.
Garth, I think I've talked enough.
You have. Considering you were worried you didn't have enough.
Oh, I was.
You've managed to talk for a long old time, which leaves us with only a couple of minutes left of the show.
Oh.
So I just wanted to let you know about some Kickstarter experiences I've had lately to wrap up this show. So I backed Sweet Mess.
Oh, yes.
Which
tell me about that.
Definitely 100% going to be the next Splendor, I hope, because I backed it to the tune of about $100. Tile. Ooh. Sort of, you got those Splendor-style chips where each one's are ingredients.
Oh, yes.
You've got mechanics where you'll be picking up a couple of them on your turn to make certain ingredients, which will then allow you to upgrade each individual kitchen to make it more efficient.
Doesn't it also have the...
Games trays.
The
game trays, which look sweet as, considering that we played Wasteland Express Delivery Service only a couple of days ago, and they came in that game.
Oh, yeah, they're amazing trays.
Geez, that makes the game easy to... tear down and break up. The other one is U-Boot, which is the...
Is that coming soon?
No, it's not. But this is the submarine board game where you are cooperatively and in real time trying to manage a submarine.
That's a massive 3D submarine.
One of you will be the captain, one of you be an engineer, one of you will be the gunner, and one of you will be someone else.
Yep.
Comes with an app where when someone needs to look at the periscope, they have to put the their mobile phone up to their face. And in order to see what's going on, you've got to move your face from left to right. It smashed it on Kickstarter to the tune of £600,000 or £700,000. They've been doing some pretty regular updates on that.
That's good.
Still looking at delivering towards the end of the year, which will come around really quickly. I upgraded my pledge to for £35 extra to include all the internal plastic sort of 3D bits and pieces
fittings.
In it.
Yeah,
so that's
going to
look fantastic. Yes. And then I've also been waiting on news for some spoons.
which
Mark, you put us on to now several years ago.
Yeah.
These wonderful origami style measuring spoons.
With magnets.
With
amazing magnet
these
technology
magnets
spoons.
Seem to have caused hell for the designers and certainly for the backers. These spoons were meant to be, you fold up this bit of plastic origami style, and depending on where you hold it, it'll either be a teaspoon all the way to a tablespoon.
Yeah,
worth of,
all the different measures.
And then because
sounds amazing.
Because it was origami style, when you let go, it'd fold flat, which makes it easy to clean. It was like $16.
And it's like a magnet, so you can just stick it on your fridge when you're not using it folded flat.
Problem is it's about 3 years late. So
I believe they've had some
that.
Engineering issues.
Yeah. Though. Anyway, back to games. The last...
I was going
to
say, Seventh Continent. So
yes.
I jumped on Seventh Continent in the second round.
Yep.
You know, we played had we played Leon's games when I backed it? I think I backed it first, and then Leon got his copy.
Yeah.
And because I went all in with the expansion and everything, I think it cost me about, more than $250, probably a lot more.
Yep.
It was due to come October this year, and now it's blown out. No, it's blown out to February.
Oh, wow. It's a big blowout.
So it's going to be almost a year, I think, by the time it comes.
Wow.
And, of course, then we played Leon's and he sold it straight away.
Yeah.
But, look, I'm still excited for I think it's going to be a game that that my partner and I are going to play lots of, particularly with the save mechanic.
Yeah, so I'm in this situation where I currently am not backing any live Kickstarters. Ooh. So I'm waiting for something that's really going to take my fancy. But, look, that's all the time we've got time for. On today's show,
yeah,
we have to go and play a train game.
Yes.
Which we won't be talking about on any future shows because we've already talked about Russian Railroads. We are playing this for fun and nothing but fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've been Garth.
I've been Mark.
Leon has been absent. We have been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been episode 218. And thanks, of course, to Area 52.
Thank you.
If you are in, around, or thinking of being in the Sydney area on either Friday the 13th, Saturday the 14th, or Sunday the 15th, make your way to the Bankstown Sports Club.
Yes.
You will have the pleasure of going to LFG. You will have the unfortunate pleasure of probably having a talk to Mark, because he will be there.
I won't be there on the Friday night because I'm flying in late and I'm going to be jet-lagged, clearly coming from Hobart. But Saturday and Sunday I'll be there.
If you're there and if you want to get your voice on the radio,
hey,
go and say hi and say, hi, I'm your biggest fan, Mark. Interview me. And he'll never say no to that.
You might even get a snazzy custom die.
Correct. Anyway, we are out of here. And we'll see you all. Well, I won't actually be here.
You'll
next
be away.
Week.
It's just Leon and I holding the fort next week. We've got some plans.
All right. We've been the Dice Men Cometh. Some of us will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to another episode of the Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.